they decided we'll shoot ourselves and claim we had this big home invasion robbery and his safe was stolen with all this jewelry. Let me tell you something. From what I understand, they don't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out.
Volusia County Sheriff Mike Chitwood was seething Tuesday. He said a Deltona couple shot themselves in an effort to stage a home invasion. Detectives weren't fooled, and Chitwood had plenty more to say about it. That story and more are coming up on Sun Crime State. I'm Tony Holt, crime reporter for the Daytona Beach News Journal. Welcome to Sun Crime State, a weekly podcast that takes an in-depth look at Florida's biggest crime stories of the past and present. Coming up in our Only in Florida segment, I'll profile the recent arrest of a couple accused of trying to fool law enforcement into thinking they were the victims of a home invasion in the hopes they could collect a large sum of insurance money. Deputies said they took it way too far. And later, in our Looking Back segment, I'll discuss the murder of Abraham Shakespeare, a lottery winner who lost his fortune and his life to a woman, Dee Dee Moore, who had tricked Shakespeare into thinking she was going to write a book about his life and help manage his finances. My special guest for that segment will be Tampa Bay Times reporter Howard Altman and former Lakeland Ledger reporter Marissa Green. After the break, I'll talk to my News Journal colleague Frank Fernandez about the sentencing for former gang leader and murder defendant Luis Toledo.
We got the answer that we wanted last week with the guilty verdict. Either way, we're happy, and God's job is good.
That was Michael Otto, the father of two murdered children, who told reporters that a life sentence for the killer was good enough for him. During the evening of November 3rd, after sitting through a trial that lasted more than a month, and then listening to days of emotional testimony during the penalty phase, and after deliberating for 4 hours on a sentencing recommendation, a 12-member jury recommended life in prison without parole for Luis Toledo. A week earlier, the 35-year-old defendant, a former high-ranking member of the Latin Kings street gang, was convicted in the slayings of his wife, Yesenia Suarez, and her two children, 9-year-old Thalia Otto and 8-year-old Michael Elijah Otto. The victims disappeared from their Deltona home in October 2013. Jurors were only two votes shy of a unanimous recommendation for death. Daytona Beach News Journal legal reporter Frank Fernandez told me that he was moderately surprised that jurors weren't unanimously in favor of a death sentence, but Toledo's defense team disclosed one pertinent detail about Toledo's childhood that may have impacted his fate.
It was a little bit surprising, but not entirely. The defense had also put on some compelling arguments, mitigators. Really, the one that I found that would have been compelling if I was on the jury would have been that they said that when Toledo was 9 years old, he spent 7 months in a psychiatric hospital, which I thought was rather startling for a nine-year-old to spend 7 months in a psychiatric hospital has to indicate some serious problem.
After the jurors' recommendations were read, Toledo hugged his lead attorney. He had been stoic throughout the month-long trial, but in that moment, he conveyed a sense of relief. Prosecutor Ryan Wills said he accepted the jury's recommendation and added that a life sentence in prison for Toledo was a substantial amount of justice for the victim's family. The most horrifying fact of the case is virtually unequivocal. Toledo killed Suarez. But there was at least a tiny measure of ambiguity when it came to the fate of the two children. The motivation Toledo had for killing Thalia and Michael Elijah, according to the state attorney's office, was to eliminate them as witnesses to their mother's killing. Jurors, however, didn't think the state proved that argument, which likely contributed to the recommendation of life in prison instead of death. Prosecutors called two witnesses to the stand. Suarez's mother, Felicita Perez, and Suarez's former husband, Michael Otto, the father of Thalia and Michael Elijah. And they gave some gut-wrenching testimony.
She talked about seeing the kids on Christmas morning in their pajamas, opening presents. She talked about how the girl who was Thalia Otto was already, even though she's still in elementary school, was talking about graduating from high school, going on to college and becoming a veterinarian, and had already told her grandmother that she wanted her at her graduation. High school graduation. She broke down saying, "I'm sorry, Thalia, I'm not going to be able to attend your graduation." Michael Otto talked a lot about both kids too. He's the father. He talked about how the boy's name was Michael Elijah Otto, and he described him as a little mini-me who was supposed to carry on the family name.
The forensic evidence in the case was scarce, but what little investigators found did help their case, including the traces of blood from one of the victims inside Suarez's home. The bodies of Suarez and her two children have never been found. Toledo told investigators when he was arrested 4 years ago he would never tell them what he did with them, and he still hasn't.
Toledo told them at one point during one of the interviews to check the gator pits. That's very vague, and as Circuit Judge Rose Zambrano pointed out, just about any pond in Florida is a gator pit.
Some sand was discovered on a floor mat in Suarez's car, which indicated Toledo may have been near a body of water the day the victims went missing. The route Toledo took the day he killed his victims cuts through more than 90 square miles from Deltona to Sanford. That's too big of a territory to conduct a search party, and it contains way too many bodies of water to dispatch a team of divers. Regardless, Suarez's mother is still hopeful that someday Toledo will break down and confess where the bodies are. That's what she told reporters outside the courtroom following the trial.
"One day, if you want God to forgive him, he needs to confess to let us know what he did and let us find our family no matter whatever's left.
Toledo's formal sentencing is scheduled for January 19th. Shortly thereafter, he'll be transferred from the Volusia County Branch Jail to a state prison. Coming up, the case of a West Volusia County couple accused of shooting themselves inside their home to make it look like they'd been burglarized. A married Deltona couple called the Volusia County Sheriff's Office claiming they had been shot inside their home by two intruders. Deputies were told by Doug Teixeira and his wife, Lindsay Pelton, that two men entered their home on Hayward Avenue through a backsliding glass door in the middle of the afternoon on October 26th. They said they had a brief exchange with the suspects before the gunfire. The 35-year-old Teixeira and the 36-year-old Pelton were shot in the leg and the arm, respectively, and they were hospitalized. Deputies even initiated a search for the suspects. But it didn't take long for deputies to think something was fishy, according to Sheriff Mike Chitwood.
The first deputies that arrived on scene, one of the first things he said to me when I got there was, "The house smells of bleach." Somebody else noticed that the blood was dried. Well, if this incident just occurred, they called police right away. Why would you have dried blood, and why do we have bleach all over the house?
The couple also claimed to have had $7,000 in loose cash stolen out of a safe they owned. Pelton's own father blew the lid off that story, according to authorities. He said his daughters and her husband didn't have two pennies to rub together. He also said his daughter had probably never seen $7,000 in her entire life. Chitwood told the News Journal that Pelton has a criminal history that indicates she has a penchant for orchestrating scams. She and her husband were arrested Tuesday on charges of giving false information to law enforcement.
They make up this story to create a scam so they could sue the homeowner because he wouldn't fix a locked door. They put fear and panic in the city of Deltona because I've received emails and phone calls nonstop. And they besmirched us because they made us look bad in our community's eyes. because these two knuckleheads don't have the wherewithal to go out and get a job and earn money the way everybody else does.
Coming up, the story of Abraham Shakespeare, a lottery winner who was murdered after his killer sucked him dry. Six, 12, 13, 34, 42, 52. Those were the six numbers spat out by a lottery machine, and a ticket containing those numbers was purchased by Abraham Lee Shakespeare on November 15, 2006, inside a Town Star convenience store in Frostproof, a small city squeezed between two big lakes in southern Polk County. Shakespeare hit the jackpot with that set of numbers, and he collected a lump sum of $13 million. The man only lived another 2.5 years. He died weeks before his 43rd birthday. By the time of his disappearance, Shakespeare had lost all but $16,000 of his fortune. It took 8 months before authorities found Shakespeare's remains. They were under a concrete slab in the backyard of a house in Plant City, located about 25 miles east of Tampa. The woman who would later be convicted of Shakespeare's murder was Dee Dee Moore. She is serving a life sentence after being convicted of first-degree murder. Shakespeare lived a simple life in Lakeland. He spent a portion of his working life in the field of sanitation, and when he bought his winning lottery ticket, he was delivering supplies to a couple of fast food restaurants. A story about him winning the lottery was published in the Lakeland Ledger, which was then followed by a story about him owing back child support payments. Shakespeare agreed to be interviewed for a third story, but didn't go into that interview feeling all that confident or all that friendly toward the press. The Ledger reporter assigned to that story was Marissa Green, and here she is describing to me her first encounter with Lakeland's newest millionaire.
Shakespeare was very, very angry about this, about his child support woes becoming a major headline in the Ledger. From that point, he wanted to clear up his image, and several people in his inner circle had reached out to me saying that he wanted to tell his side of the story.
Green started to win over Shakespeare. He opened up to her a little, insisting to her that he only splurged a little bit with his newfound fortune. He bought a Nissan, some clothes, and a used Rolex. To say Shakespeare lacked money management would be way too much of an understatement. Shakespeare was illiterate. He could barely work a cell phone, and he couldn't differentiate between a $100 loan and a $1,000 loan. People constantly were hitting him up for money. Then came one hanger-on in particular. I recently spoke with Howard Altman, formerly of the Tampa Tribune, and now with the Tampa Bay Times. While with the Tribune, he covered the Shakespeare murder case from beginning to end.
He was a very generous guy. The money disappeared quickly. He gave money to his friends and family. He bought property, he bought vehicles. And then at some point, this woman, Doris Donegan Dee Dee Moore, comes on the scene, and she tells Abraham that she's going to write a book about his life.
Dee Dee Moore was a curvy blonde who Shakespeare gravitated toward right away. What he didn't know was that Moore had a history of committing fraud and telling whopping tales. Altman wrote about her tendency to make up stories.
A lot of stories. She was a confabulator. We did a profile on her, and you know, she was a young kid. She liked the trappings of wealth. Her parents were, you know, not wealthy, and she was embarrassed by their vehicle, and she'd go to a party and have her parents like park blocks away so she would get on walks. She had, you know, she worked at a very early age and made money, but it was never enough. And at some point, she had a $50,000 Lincoln Navigator that was being repossessed. And so she stashed it somewhere in Pasco County and told investigators that she had been, you know, kidnapped and raped. And that the car was taken. And it was just, you would never know that she'd eventually kill somebody, but these were signs that she and Truth were not always on the same page.
In 2001, Dee Dee was convicted of insurance fraud and falsely reporting a crime. A year or so later, she filed for bankruptcy. Dee Dee seemed to realize from the start that Shakespeare was someone she could shake down. Green told me she eventually went in for the kill, and she pointed out that wasn't meant to be a figure of speech. Here is Green talking to me about how Dee Dee met Shakespeare.
They were at a minority contractor conference, and Dee Dee was in a wheelchair. It was Shakespeare's realtor that had introduced Shakespeare to Dee Dee. You know, it was just by circumstance that they crossed paths, and they were out of town at this conference. You know, she said that he had a fascinating story, and she wanted to write a book about him. And, you know, again, she presented herself as this well-organized and successful businesswoman. She essentially said that she could help him get some of his financial issues in order.
Dee Dee had to convince Shakespeare he could trust her, and he did almost immediately. The pair didn't have a sexual relationship, as far as people knew, but Shakespeare liked being with her, and Dee Dee liked having carte blanche with her friend's cash.
They would go to the Hard Rock Casino in Tampa quite a bit together and spend money and gamble all night and all of that good stuff. Because of that, he was a little bit more trusting of Dee Dee than the people he had in his inner circle. I mean, his closest confidants, he sort of moved out of the picture because of Dee Dee.
Here is Dee Dee, who filmed a couple minutes of a conversation with Shakespeare not long before he was killed. She spoke to him while he played with the remote to a video surveillance system he had bought for his new house in Polk County.
Do you get tired of people asking you for money all the time, Abe? Give me your opinion on it. You just ready to start living your life, huh?
They don't take no for an ounce or so. And just let them keep on and keep on acting.
By the time Dee Dee met Shakespeare in 2008, he had already burned through the majority of his winnings. Shakespeare had wasted much of his wealth by freely giving loans to people. He expected to be paid back, but he never was. He liked gift-giving, too. He would buy new cars for his friends. Dee Dee was also generous with Shakespeare's money. She had a boyfriend, a young one, and she bought that boyfriend a Corvette. Shakespeare wasn't just going to be another victim of the lottery curse. He was going to become its most glaring example.
Like you said, they're not equipped to handle money. They just don't know what to do. They get inundated by family and friends. That's what happened to Shakespeare right off the bat. He had people, as soon as he won, he had people glomming onto him. Family members coming out and asking for handouts. And so when you don't know what to do and you're not prepared to deal with the fallout, there could be some tremendously unfortunate consequences.
Dee Dee not only wanted to dupe Shakespeare, but also his family. Once Dee Dee took out Shakespeare, she had to convince those close to him that he wasn't dead. He was just on a sabbatical, eager to get away from all those people leeching onto him. Here she is talking to Shakespeare like she was putting thoughts into his head about traveling or moving abroad.
So where do you want to go to?
It don't matter to me. I'm not a picky person.
California. You want a foreign country. Cozumel.
Here is Shakespeare telling Dee Dee that if he ever moved, he wouldn't get too sentimental about it.
Well, how do you like, are you going to miss your home?
Yep, I miss it, but life goes on.
Green told me Shakespeare eventually started to voice his skepticism about Dee Dee, directly to Dee Dee, and that could have led to his doom.
Law enforcement believed that was ultimately what caused his death, was because he was starting to get suspicious of what was happening with his money. And I believe he may have expressed that to some of his close friends.
In the spring of 2009, Shakespeare wasn't heard from again. Detectives later concluded he was killed on either April 6th or 7th at a house off State Road 60 near Plant City. But it wasn't until November that Shakespeare's family reported him missing. That was largely due to Dee Dee convincing them that Shakespeare had decided on his own to leave town.
For 8 months, Dee Moore was communicating with Shakespeare's family. At some point, she was sending out text messages to Shakespeare's mom, and she would give various stories about why he wasn't around. At some point, she said he went away to get away from everything. One point, she said that he was seeking AIDS treatment. She gave a lot of stories, different stories, to the family about, you know, why Abraham wasn't around for those 8 months.
At one point, Dee Dee manipulated Shakespeare's old boss and friend, Greg Smith, a barber, to call Shakespeare's mother and disguise his voice. He set out to convince her that Shakespeare was alive and well, just living in a faraway place. He just needed a buffer from those who had been pestering him. The ruse did not turn out well for Smith or Dee Dee. It was Dee Dee who got the call from Smith while at a restaurant with Shakespeare's mother. She handed the phone over, and Shakespeare's mom heard Smith's voice, disguised as her son's. By then, her skepticism of Dee Dee had started to take shape. Smith would later be picked up by law enforcement because detectives had traced the call. Smith told law enforcement he didn't fully know what he was doing. He knew it was dishonest, but didn't realize how cruel it was. He swore he never suspected Shakespeare was dead, and he only agreed to make the phone call because he thought it would make Shakespeare's mother feel better. Smith eventually flipped. Instead of playing ball with Dee Dee, he started playing ball with detectives in an effort to put Dee Dee behind bars. Dee Dee had many conversations with Smith, not realizing they were being recorded. At one point, she admitted to him that Shakespeare was dead. Shakespeare's entire family, meanwhile, weren't getting suckered anymore.
They trusted Dee Dee to a point, and then they realized that they weren't getting straight answers. So they finally, around November of 2009, came forward. And there had been rumors before that he'd been missing. And that's where it started to kick off.
Word got around just before her arrest that November that Dee Dee was the main suspect. Television media began staking out her home. Her public claims of innocence began then.
Because I have never hurt that man. He knows I would, everyone knows, I would never hurt that man in any way.
Did you murder Abraham Shakespeare?
Absolutely not.
You indicated you know who pulled the trigger.
I have given all the information to the Sheriff's Department.
Green, like Altman, interviewed Dee Dee before she was charged.
Dee Dee thought she was very slick. She tried to seem like she was someone who was very sincere and cared a lot about those around her. But I saw through that as well, because when we invited her in for an interview, after the interview was over with, she gave me a big hug. And I was just sickened to my core because my gut told me she had something to do with his disappearance. Now, at that point, we didn't know if he was dead or alive. But I really, based on all of the research and walking the pavement and talking to people that I did, I knew that she was the number one suspect in all of this, even before the sheriff's office named her officially.
Dee Dee was arrested one day after that interview. Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd did a lot of interviews during and after the Shakespeare investigation. He even drove through Shakespeare's old neighborhood with a reporter from ABC's Nightline. Here is Judd during a media conference discussing how the investigation led to Dee Dee.
We certainly hope that the Confidence Act that Dee Dee Moore is involved in, to make it appear that Abraham Shakespeare has disappeared with money, is correct and he's alive and well. But our investigation doesn't lead us to believe that at this time. It leads us to believe that she pulled a con game on Shakespeare, convinced him to move his assets into a joint account through an LLC that she named Abraham Shakespeare LLC but created access to. Plus, she agreed to buy the house and other assets from him for which we can't find any records of purchase.
So where was Shakespeare's body? It was under concrete, which was poured into a deep hole on some property owned by Dee Dee. She got one of her oblivious allies to dig that hole for her.
Dee Dee had somewhat of a cordial relationship with her ex-husband. So he came with a backhoe and digged the hole that Shakespeare's body was found in. And he testified in court that she said she needed to burn some trash as to the reason why she needed the hole dug. So, I mean, Dee Dee was able to get any and everybody to do whatever she wanted and needed done. And her ex-husband was one of them.
A contractor, who also was clueless as to what was going on, was later hired by Dee Dee to pour concrete into the hole. Due to the thick layers of dirt and concrete, it took 3 days for a crew to reach Shakespeare's remains. The state attorney's office concluded the victim had been shot twice with a .38 caliber revolver and then dragged by Dee Dee and then dropped into the hole. 3 years later, in late 2012, Dee Dee stood trial for the murder of Abraham Shakespeare. By then, she was a brunette and was noticeably slimmer. Time and again, Dee Dee came unglued. Her attorney at times looked helpless, trying to get her to calm down. Bailiffs frequently told her to stop being so disruptive and demonstrative. Hillsborough County Circuit Judge Emmett Battles dressed her down. One of those verbal reprimands was later aired on ABC's 2020.
Just a moment, ma'am. Just a moment. I'm going to tell you once again, you need to compose yourself. You understand that?
Dee Dee, who declined to testify, was sentenced to life plus 20 years. She's now an inmate at the Lowell Correctional Institution in Ocala. After her conviction, Dee Dee continued to make herself available to the media. Ever since that first day when camera crews assembled in front of her house, Dee Dee has strenuously maintained her innocence. She was interviewed soon after the verdict by ABC News reporter Matt Gutman. Portions of that interview aired on 2020. Here she is having a strong take on those convinced of her guilt.
I think people are complete idiots that think I had anything to do with it. I really do. I think they have no brain cells.
Did you murder Abraham Shakespeare?
Absolutely not.
Did you bury him in your backyard?
Absolutely not.
Why are you laughing?
Because...
A man is dead. He's been murdered,
yes,
clearly.
Yes.
And you're laughing.
Yeah. Because I find it entertaining that people are that ignorant. Because there are so many things that proves my innocence.
She later theorized how she got embroiled in such a case, in spite of being so innocent.
Stupidity. I am not a person to hang around drug dealers. I'm not a person to hang around bad, mean, evil people. I wouldn't say naive. I just was not street smart.
Dee Dee's high-strung personality came through at times during her sit-down with Gutman. She cried. She rambled.
They murdered me by the hands of justice. I'm murdered. You might as well kill me, because this is no type of living in here. I would never harm another human being. I would never hurt nobody. I liked Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and Disney. I like Tinkerbell and kind things. I'm not a mean person. I know I'll go to heaven. God knows I'm innocent. That is one person that knows I'm innocent.
The biggest takeaway from the case, it seems, is the tragedy of Abraham Shakespeare. He's named after a patriarch of three of the world's biggest religions and has the same surname as the most studied literary giant in the history of the English language. And yet his name will be synonymous with one of Florida's most infamous criminal cases of the past decade. He will be known as someone who suffered a tragic end rather than a triumphant one, even after being gifted a fortune.
Absolutely. If he hadn't stopped at the convenience store in Frostproof, we never, ever would have heard of a guy named Abraham Shakespeare. He would have gone about his life the way it always had been, under the radar, invisible to most of the public, except for his, you know, circle of friends and family in Lakeland, Florida. But six numbers came up and thrust him into, you know, a pretty prominent time. He never knew, because he got two bullets in his body, and that was the end of Abraham Shakespeare.
4 months ago came another twist in this story. Shakespeare's mother, Antoinette Andrews, won $1 million from a $20 scratch-off game she bought at a Circle K in Lakeland. Andrews told the Lakeland Ledger after she won the jackpot that she felt a little weird and a little scared. Thank you for listening. Join me next week when I discuss the slaying of Teresa Dusevich, who was killed 44 years ago in a small city in the panhandle called Niceville. Her killer has never been identified. A 15-year-old girl was shot during an attempted abduction in the same city less than 7 months later, and investigators found out the bullet in that shooting came from the same gun as the one used to kill Dusevich. My special guest next week will be Sergeant Nelsie Suhi Moore of the Okaloosa County Sheriff's Office, who spent years investigating the Dusevich cold case. Join us then.
You can find Tony on Twitter at TonyCrimeWriter or email him at tony.holt@news-jrnl.com. Be sure to rate us on iTunes. Sun Crime State is recorded by Tony Holt and produced by Chris Bridges for the Daytona Beach News Journal.